Susan Robb for Teachers for a New Era. Talking with Katie Davis, who does wonderful, playful books for kids, including books like Who Hops, Who Hoots, Kindergarten Rocks, and a particular favorite of mine, Mabel the Tooth Fairy, and how she got her job. And most recently, a book called The Curse of Addie McMahon. School Library Journal has said about her work that she uses eye-popping color combinations. And anyone who's looked at Katie's books will recognize that. Mabel, for example, has green hair and a blue face. And they're all really a lot of fun. So first, Katie, tell me, how would you describe your work?
Quirky would be the first word that comes to mind. It's not quiet or sentimental. It's funny, usually, hopefully, and it's very quirky. I usually can't imagine my illustrations with someone else's text. That said, I am now illustrating the first book written by my husband, but we have worked on it together, so it's it is in unison with my normal style, I think.
And with that, I mean, you know his style or his work too. Tell me about the work that he's done.
Well, he's been a producer for feature animation. He produced Robots, and he worked on as far back as Toy Story and Ice Age, and things like that. But he's always helped me. So he's always about the story. And he always says when he reads my books in the early stages, well, the first act, the second act, I don't know. And, you know, you really need something with the drama in the third. I never know what he was talking about. And now it's enough years of that. I've heard it's sunk in, and it's really helped me with the arc of my stories, even picture books that are very simple. We were talking last night, in fact, about how an assumption in a very simple picture book that has maybe 60 words in the entire thing is that X is happening, and we can't do this because then that will mean that such and such. And it's such a simple picture book, and nobody would realize that so much thought and every single thing in it is deliberate and planned out.
And they are, I mean, there is sort of a theatricality to the books. I mean, they are, I mean, you feel movement. And even the way the characters, there's an awful lot of voices going on, even if it's one character. I was thinking that when I was looking at Kindergarten Rocks, the character's arguing with himself.
Right.
That sort of.
Yeah, many of my books have little thought bubbles and speaking bubbles because there's this running commentary that goes along in our own heads, and it ends up in my books. And I also think that it's very hard, for me at least, sometimes to tell the story just on one level. And as a parent and reading some books ad nauseum to my kids, I would probably, I always appreciated it when an author told a story on different levels so that the adult can appreciate it as well as the child.
Yeah, that was actually something I was going to ask you about, because it did strike me as that they would be a lot of entertainment for the adults as well as for the kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And reading it, it's funny because I was at a meeting with over this new book, Little Chickens, Big Day, and the art director read a line not at all the way I hear it in my head. And I turned to our editor, my husband's and my editor, and said, okay, this is why I have to go into every person's home who buys this book and read it to them so they know how to read it properly. And which, of course, you can't control. So you have to make sure that the tone comes across visually or somehow in the story. And that's why I argued a point for something that needs to be included in this particular line. And it's an interesting dilemma to have, though.
Now, another thing that your books seem to me to be like are great for reading aloud and for play.
Oh, definitely. And it's really interesting. I've had comments, especially about Who Hops. One librarian came up to me one time and said, your book saved my life. It was the first time I was going to, she had the children's story time, and she was so scared. And the book almost reads itself because it's a interplay between the authority adult and the child listening, and when the child hears the adult read cows hop before they turn the page and see that it says no they don't, cows moo and give milk but they don't hop, the kid says what, no, you know, especially if they haven't heard it before. And it is so wonderful for a child to be right in the face of your incorrect statement that cows hop, and they could say what, no they don't, and then you turn the page and see you were right, they don't hop.
So it's fun. Let me ask about what kids tell you about the books.
Oh, wow. They generally tell me how much they love them. They identify with a lot of things. I have been told, actually, by a very serious kindergarten that Miss Katie Davis, because that's my first name is Katie Davis, apparently, and this little child said, but cows do hop. They hop over the moon. So I realized I hadn't been thinking about the cow jumping over the moon at that point, but they say some fantastic things. It's really great. Mabel the Tooth Fairy, they want to know how I know about her and how I knew she was the first one. And The Curse of Addie McMahon, these are older kids now saying how much they want me to write a sequel and that they said it's the best book ever. And then they say, I've only read two books. So I don't know who the other book is. But it's the best book ever out of the one I ever read. But I get a lot of really nice comments from children.
Now, where did you get the idea for Mabel? I didn't want to go off from her because she is such a fun character, and it's such a moment for, or not moment, but it's something for kids. It's such an important thing that they remember all their life about losing teeth.
It's funny that you asked that because I don't, of all my books, I remember how I thought of them, where I thought of them, how it developed, and I don't remember how Mabel came. I do know that when I go to schools to visit, I have some slides that show how I believe she was planted in my head, and that was in seventh grade when I had a French teacher who assigned me my favorite kind of homework, which was to write a story and illustrate it. And I found it in my mother's attic not too long ago, and because it was for French, it had to be in French, and it was bound with purple yarn and bad drawings and in it, since it's written in French, she had to have a French name, and I named her Mabel Molière. And I realized many years later that Molière sounds like molar. And when I was writing Mabel the Tooth Fairy, I thought, people would say to me, how'd you come up with the name Mabel for the Tooth Fairy? I mean, at the time, nobody was naming their kids Mabel. It was a name strictly from the 1920s that nobody had ever heard of since. Suddenly realized I really do think that Mabel Molière is somehow related to Mabel the Tooth Fairy, and it just came into my head. And also I heard her voice in my head, and she talks like this, you know. So it's, I actually have a friend of my mom's, it's her voice, and it's a fabulous voice, and I really need to make a book with her voice reading Mabel's parts. But that's pretty much the story of Mabel. It was a very, very hard story to write because we have an assumption. It's an existing legend. She collects the teeth at night. She collects only children's teeth. She pays for what she takes. And kids don't see her. I do know why kids don't see her. Because her boyfriend's the Sandman, and he does not allow the children to be awake. You know, I mean, obviously. But when Mabel started, she didn't know why should she take kids' teeth? Why should she work at night? I had to figure all those problems out. So that's pretty much the story of Mabel the Tooth Fairy.
Yeah, she is a lot of fun, and it's a romance. It has just about everything.
It's not a romance. They're friends. They're biffles. No, they're best friends.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
The Sandman would not like to hear that she's romantically inclined to Dr. Les Payne.
Although it was such a practical, perhaps, relationship.
Yes, yes, they have a lot in common. You know. He says spit, she says give me your teeth. You know, it works well.
So tell me about Addie, because that's the first novel?
It's the first one that's been published. Yeah. Addie, The Curse of Addie McMahon is about a girl who, in a nutshell, very prideful. She refuses to apologize. She refuses to take responsibility for the bad stuff in her life. And she also takes responsibility for the things she shouldn't, like her father's death and stuff. And I say father's death, and then I'm going to tell you it's a funny novel. But that's how life is. You know, it's a melding of two. So, and I think that finally in the later versions of the manuscript, I realize how to allow people to enjoy the fun parts and the funny stuff and still feel the poignancy of the hard things in her life, like her friends hating her, her father dying, her mother is going to be, you know, married to somebody, and she's very upset about all this. And and the way I did that was to pull all the hard stuff out and put it in her comic books. So she writes her diary as a comic book, and she calls it, it's her autobiography, so, and it's in comic strip form, so she calls it her autobiography strip. And it really made it much more palatable for a reader, because then it was almost, it's almost a physical shift in expectations. So that ended up working really well. It just took me 9 years to figure that out.
Yeah, it did when I was looking at it. It is a interesting format to use it in that way. And did you, do you draw, when you're working on something like that, where did the comic strip portion come from? Or what I mean is, where did it come into the process? Was it something you doubled back and did? Did you do it as you were doing the rest of the book?
Well, originally her autobiography strip was an assignment from a history teacher as your own personal history. And then it became her diary. And then it was an article she was going to write in the school paper. And we really went through all these different iterations. And finally, somebody said, and it was and the whole book, even from the very beginning, was going to have different kinds of things pasted into it. And this is before anybody had been doing this. So it's too bad it took me that long to figure out, or maybe I would have been the first person. But it took me a really long time. And in the end, it ended up being better, the book better for it. But finally, a friend of mine said, well, maybe she should not only be a writer, but she should be a writer and an illustrator like you. And the light bulb went on. And I realized, wow, yeah, that's, if she's an illustrator. And then it started dawning on me that what she should be keeping, and if she's a sixth grader, she should be keeping it in graphic novel format. And it was really hard for me to do that, because comic strips are not just another version of a picture book. And I'm a picture book person, so I had to really think out, okay, for example, in the beginning, she imagines a fairy is shooting an arrow at a cloud over her head, and then she's got it's going to explode. And so instead of having it just a picture illustrating what the words are saying, which is, I try not to do that either, but basically, instead of just illustrating the point, it is more like a movie where each frame of the comic strip is like a frame of an animated movie, where first the hand is down by your waist, then your hand is up, and then it's up above your head, and now you're waving side to side. So it's you really get to move much more slowly with graphics in a comic strip format, which is fun and a lot harder.
That is interesting. So how would you, if you were doing that in a book illustration, how would that process have been different?
You mean in a picture book? Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a different animal. It really is. It's a completely different thing. With picture books, I usually try to tell a different story than what the words are saying. And in so doing, we'll make the words and the text and the images work together, instead of just, it says, you know, Susie walked down the road, and showing her walking down the road. No. Or it say this is a better example. Say you have you know, Johnny was a normal kid, but then that's the text. But then the illustration shows that Johnny's a normal kid, but he's a normal Martian kid. And you only know that because you're looking at the picture and he's green and he's got an antenna. So it's in that way, you want it to them both to lean on each other, kind of like a tent poles, or I don't know. I'm doing this with my hands and you can't see me in there in Radioland. So I don't know how to explain it any better than that. But I like it when they don't say the exact, like, for example, and it lends to the humor too. For example, in Kindergarten Rocks, it says, I could hardly wait. And he's talking about his first day at kindergarten, and his face is completely scared. And so when the kids look at that, they laugh, and they know he's trying to be brave, but it's not at all what the text says. So I think with the, to answer your question, the comic strips, I think, is much more at least for my low level of experience in doing them, because I've only done this one book with it, I think that it is actually much more in tune with what the text says than what a picture book it can be. Because with a graphic novel, I think you're illustrating the words, whereas with a picture book, it's not always that way.
And no, I think that's that is helpful, and it is interesting to think of it differently. Because I think people, you know, if you're not an artist and you're not working through the process, you're seeing it laid out, but you're not really seeing all the pieces of it. So, what are some of the kinds of things that you want to do? I mean, in either in art or in your writing, what's out there for you?
Well, I have to tell you, I wrote this really weird story, and it has elements of an old Korean folktale, but it's really it's got elements left, remnants, I should say, because it's not anything based on this. It's got one little thing in it, and it's bizarre because it's very much in the tone of a fabulous book by Jules Pfeiffer called A Barrel of Laughs, A Veil of Tears, A Barrel of Laughs, A Veil of Tears. I'm messing up the title, but anyway, and I'm just reading it now and hearing how similar many things are. Like, there are a lot of rimshot jokes in it, you know, like ba dum bum, you know, that kind of joke. But I couldn't figure out what it was, because there's no child protagonist. There's no, it's too short for a novel, and it's too long for a picture book. And then Jane Yolen, who luckily for me is a friend of mine, read it, and because she's a folktale queen, and I said, well, what is it? And she said, well, go look, I think maybe it could be sold like kind of like The Little Prince. It's nothing like The Little Prince story, but I went to the bookstore and I looked in it, and I haven't read it in, you know, 30 years, and I said, oh my gosh, I knew immediately what it needed to have, like spot art, and it's sort of a slim volume like that. And as soon as I saw that, I said, okay, I know. And then, to answer your question about what I see myself doing, which I haven't done ever, I think, I started doing watercolors. But they're fun. They're funny. And usually I think of watercolors as sort of for lofty, beautiful, you know, serious picture books or poetry or something. But these are like kind of kooky looking, very bizarre watercolors. And I hope the book sells, because as soon as I sent it to my agent, she said, oh, I get it now, what this book is. And that really made me feel so good, because I felt the same way. And I've never had that experience where the art made you understand or made the text so reachable, you know? It was a weird experience, but it was a great experience. But also, the other thing I'm working on is older novels for older kids.
Oh, that's fun. Will they have illustration?
Not the one that's out now.
Now, that's great. So we'll look for those. Okay. And people, I also should say, people should also visit your website, because it's so much fun, is katiedavis.com.
Right.
So thanks, Katie, for talking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you for interviewing me. Also, they might want to see, if they want to make their own autobiography strip, they can go to autobiographystrip.com. And it's like autobiography, but with the strip at the end and no fee. So autobiographystrip.com.
Thanks. I hope they do.